you're gonna need a bigger boat.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
Life, finds a way.
Welcome back to Spielberg Chronologically, which is part of the Chronologically podcast. This is the podcast where we go through the full filmographies of some of cinema's greatest creators. My name is Jeff. With me, as always, is Eric.
Hey, Jeff. How's it going, man?
It's going well. We are back in the realm of Spielberg, of arguably the greatest to ever direct movies. And we're doing another little side bonus here, as both of us have just watched Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, so it is Spielberg adjacent, hence the bonus episode.
Yeah, it feels like having watched and rated and ranked and reviewed the other four Indiana Jones films, skipping the Dial of Destiny would be just wrong. It doesn't matter.
There'd be no reason to.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if Spielberg directed it or not. He's an executive producer. I think it's close enough. And it's an Indiana Jones film.
Well,
we've done other adjacent ones. Yeah, things with more tenuous connections than this.
I mean, the Jurassic Park ones really are even looser than this, like that third trilogy, or second trilogy. But Indiana Jones, did you get a chance to watch this in theaters, or is this your first viewing?
I did not. So we had our newborn baby over the summer. And so I was deeply occupied with newborn baby things, as those listeners that have children can attest. Those first few months are just chaos. So I didn't get out to the theater to see any of the summer movies. And so now, at the time we're recording this, it's the week before Christmas, and all these movies are starting to hit streaming. And so I'm catching up on all the summer stuff that I missed, which is fantastic and fun. So this film, it's been available to rent for a while, but it just showed up on Disney Prime maybe 10 days ago. And yep. So, as of the time of this recording, I caught it. Yeah. As of this recording. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had not seen it. And honestly, if it weren't for this podcast, we'd probably never get around to it. It's documented on this show that I'm not a huge Indiana Jones fan. I love The Last Crusade, and I'm lukewarm on the Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I've recently converted to liking Temple of Doom. And, of course, we both agree that that fourth one was trash. So I wasn't, after watching the trailers and all of this, I wasn't that hyped to see it. So I don't know that I would have ever gotten around to it just because I don't care. I will say this is directed by James Mangold, who has directed some absolute classics. 310 to Yuma, of course, Logan, which is probably his best film.
I did not know that he directed 310 to Yuma. I'm familiar with Mangold primarily from Logan, but man, I love 310 to Yuma. That's a great movie. It is. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's most recently Ford versus Ferrari. And then a couple others that are all notable. Walk the Line, Johnny Cash story. He did that.
Oh, this was like my guy, man. Like, yeah. He doesn't do anything that I don't like. Holy cow.
Well, just to finish it out, Girl Interrupted, Copland, which is fine. Kate and Leopold so he's been working with Hugh Jackman a bunch.
Right. Yeah, Girl Interrupted. That's a wild movie. What's her name? Keeping those chickens under her bed. Yeah.
Never seen it.
Oh, man.
So you watched this recently. I watched it yesterday in several sittings just because it was a busy day.
Yeah, I had problems. So, like, my initial attempt, I took my family and I sat them all down and I said, I'm going to watch this Indiana Jones movie. You can watch it with me, but you have to be quiet. I want to watch this like I'm watching it in the theater. I want to let it hit me like it would hit me the first time seeing it in the theater. This is important to me. Everybody shut up. I'm going to watch this movie. And by God, they chattered through the entire goddamn thing. And 40 minutes in, I was like, whatever, family. And I turned it off. And I was like, nobody gets to watch Indiana Jones. Nobody. It's over. None of us are going to watch it. And so, two nights ago, My older daughter normally goes to bed at 9 on school nights. And in the morning, I said, "You're going to bed at 8 tonight. Your mom and I are going to watch Indiana Jones. And you're not allowed to be in the room because you've ruined it. You've ruined it.
Right.
You ruined it." So that's what we did. We put him to bed and we watched Indiana Jones. And then just right before this recording, I sat down and watched the first hour of it, just to kind of refresh myself on what happened in that first hour, because it had been a little while and there was all the chitter chatter. So,
right. Well, I did watch it in multiple parts again, cause it was kind of a busy day. I watched a little, 2 days ago, and I got about the first half done. And then yesterday sat down and watched the remainder of it. What are your thoughts? First, initial thoughts.
Watching it that first time, I kind of came away from it with the same feeling that I had the first time I watched Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. It's kind of like, that was fun, but I don't know if it's my favorite, right? And then obviously over time, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade grew in my estimation until now it is my favorite. And so I kind of came away with it wondering, like, if I sit down and watch this again, now that I know what's going on, am I going to like this more? Is this something that's going to grow on me? And so that's part of why I started watching Ian this morning. And I'll be damned, I was loving it this morning. Like,
yeah.
I was really into it this morning. So I have a feeling that this is a movie that's going to grow on me. So my next project is I recently bought a Meta Quest 3, and I discovered that on the big screen app, which simulates being in a movie theater, it's got Disney Plus integration.
Ooh.
So I can watch it in a theater and
the
VR.
Kids, you got your headphones on, and so the kids can chatter away.
Right. I'm just going to be in my own isolated little virtual world, and they can do whatever they want. So I'm going to watch it in there next. But I, you know, there are movies that you watch and you're like, this is an instant classic. Like Logan is a great example. You know, we mentioned that James Mangold directed Logan. Like, instant classic. The second I saw it, I was like, this is a keeper. I'm going to love this for the rest of my life. This was not that. This was like, I'm enjoying this. I'm having a good time. Some moments are hitting harder than others. I wonder if, as a whole, if I keep watching this, if I'm going to end up loving it, you know, like, is it going to grow on me? So it definitely was not a Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. What the hell is going on? This is a complete disaster. Like, that's not how I felt about this. It was more like, not an instant classic, could grow in estimation over the years.
Yeah. So I, again, went into it with actually pretty low expectations because I'd seen that I think it bombed in theaters and like the reviews weren't particularly great. And so I was like, oh, did they just do Crystal Skull again? And to my surprise, it wasn't. It felt like an Indiana Jones movie, right? There was none of the, I mean, there's some CG stuff, but it never gets quite as goofy. I still think it lacks, when I, again, the only one that I truly love is Last Crusade, and comparing every other movie in the series to that feels a little unfair because nothing touches it. And specifically in regards to the charisma and the chemistry between the characters. Even in the other ones, I mean, I think that Short Round and Indy have a great relationship in two. And then, of course, help me with the character's name.
Marion?
The one, yeah, Marion and Indy have their really great relationship. And all three of those movies have these tight-knit things. And then we said in four, it's like, that's what's really missing here. You have all these characters, but none of them gel. And I kind of, to a lesser degree, feel that way about Phoebe Waller in his Bridge or Bridger in this one. I feel like they never click to me. I don't feel like it's unnatural or weird or anything like that, but it never clicks and plays quite like Indy and his dad does in Last Crusade, right? Or any of the other examples. But that being said, once you get past about the first hour of this movie, it really starts to roll, because the first hour to me is kind of like the greatest hits of Indiana Jones. It's we got this thing we need to look for. Oh, we're being chased by this group. Okay, we're at this, and we go find this tablet or whatever. Oh, shit, the people chasing us are already here to intercept it, which is like the plot of every Indiana Jones.
Wait, are you talking about the first hour in the 1960s, or are you talking about the throwback to World War II? Because that's in the first hour.
Yeah, I'm talking more about like the first part of this adventure when they go Antonio Banderas is there in a weirdly small role, but I was happy to see him. But like that thing when they come out of the water and, oh shit, the bad guys are already here and they've stolen. They essentially, everyone uses Indiana Jones to do the hard shit and then they take it from them. And that's sort of what happens in every Indiana Jones movie that I can think of.
Yeah.
Except for maybe Temple of Doom. But, and so it just kind of felt like those greatest hits. And I was like, okay. And I'm seeing the similarities. And then they get it all together. And you start talking about time travel. And I'm like, are they going to time travel? And that had me thrilled. I was like, I hope they do. I hope they pull it off. I hope this movie does something ambitious and ridiculous. Because, again, following the plot of every Indiana Jones film, the bad guys get the ultimate whatever the hell they're looking for, and it ends horribly for them.
Right.
And I wanted that to happen in this movie, and it did, in such a spectacular, unexpected way that I came off very positive at the end of the movie. I really appreciated the finish. I really like the fact that they killed off off-screen Shia LaBeouf and they just moved on. But the ending of the movie is so strong and different, yet feels in the right place for Indiana Jones, that I came away really enjoying the romp that we had.
Okay, good. Okay, I'm glad that you're saying that, because I was watching that ending as it was playing out, and it's fairly long. So it's like 20 minutes probably that they're back.
You're talking
in
about
time.
Once they get, yeah.
It's like a long sequence, and I was watching that, and I was thinking that you could go one of two ways. Like, you could either like be really into it, or you could just reject it, you know. And I was really into it. And I was like, I hope Jeff likes this, because it is like longer, you know. Like in the other movies, you know, okay, they open the ark, the angels fly around, everybody's face explodes, the end, you know. Or okay, he drinks the thing, his hair grows, but it's real quick. Right. it's like less than a minute of special effects, whereas this one, it just is like, oh wait, we're gonna commit, we are doing this thing, like we are really gonna go, and there's a ship battle, and there's the giant mirrors that he was talking about in the classroom, and there's like these giant hooks, and like it's like this whole craziness, and
like
a different
movie. Like the movie Troy broke out in the middle of our Indiana Jones movie.
Right, and I was loving it. I was absolutely loving it. And but I was just like, at the same time I was thinking, like, I wonder how many audience members just rejected this completely, you know. Like, and it's funny, because I, for whatever reason, in my head, before this movie, before watching it, and I remained really spoiler free on this movie this entire time.
Yeah.
Like I like really, for whatever reason, I thought they were going to go to a Nazi base on the moon. I was like, I was ready to put money down that they were going to go into outer space and go to the moon where there were Nazis still on the moon. And I don't know where the hell that came from. I must have seen like some 2 years ago news article about the plotting of this movie or something. And like that just stuck in my head. And so the fact that it went this wildly different direction, which of course makes sense. They did space. Like space was the last one in its weird multidimensional way. So, you know, time, obviously, duh, you know, you had two gods, you had like the Hebrew God and you had Jesus and you had then the Kali thing, you know, and then you've got space, and that's like time seems like the logical next thing to do. And I was super into it. I really, really enjoyed it. So, yeah. And the rest of the movie after that too, the coda then with Marion and so on.
I loved, it was excellent. I really loved that scene. And does it hurt? It hurts everywhere or something like that. Where doesn't it hurt? And you get the little gentle kisses. And you're like, I was melting. Like, I thought it was so well done. And they saved her. And I didn't think she was going to be in the movie. I thought you and I had a conversation where she wasn't on the cast list or something. So,
yeah,
you know, he had that. I laughed when he moved the magnet off of the picture on the fridge of over her face because he didn't want to look at her. Just loved it. And I felt like it was such a good send off for a character that, again, I'm not admittedly that hooked on, but I felt like, wow, they did him very well. Like, he is old as shit doing this stuff. He kind of probably needs to stop now. But I just really thought the last hour of this movie was fun and thrilling and had a satisfying payoff. And when they went back in time, I was beaming because I was like, and I would have been disappointed had it been, oh shit, we're in the wrong time and they go back. Like you said, it's usually quick. But in this, they spend a lot of time there. They don't, their budget expanded so much to get this into the movie. And you had all the costumes and you had Archimedes and you had the payoff of Archimedes had a watch in his tomb. And it was like, why is there this watch in the tomb? And then you see how he ends up with the watch and just all the little things tie together. It made sense to me that Indy would want to stay. I really like that Phoebe Waller-Bridge punched him and then he wakes up at home. I thought that was pretty much what he would have done in that situation. You know, just really, I liked the payoff a lot.
Yeah, me too. And I want to go back to Karen Allen for just a minute because I really enjoyed seeing her in this movie because I really didn't like what they did with her in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I agree. Just,
I thought it was not the same character that she was playing in Raiders of the Lost Ark. And so seeing her come back, and she's just such a lovely presence on film. And I thought it was so nice to bring her character back and give her this moment. And, you know, there's so much history between the two characters. They've had this whole marriage that we've never seen off screen. You know, their son was killed in the Vietnam War. There's like all sorts of baggage that they're carrying along with them. And she has this, like, he says, what are you doing here? And she has this line. She says, I heard you were back, Indy. Is that true? Like, are you back? You know, and you can tell it means more than, you know, are you back from your adventures? Like, are you back? Are you going to be you now? Like, are you going to like get past this or work with me to get past this? And, you know, like it never goes into too much detail about what went wrong between them other than that she was really grieving and he just didn't have the capability of working through that with her, you know, or like he just couldn't cut through the grief or, you know, who knows what that dynamic was, but, you know, the fact that he is awakened now and she can acknowledge that and give him another chance. I just thought it was just a lovely end to the movie and to the entire series, you know? Because I think the beginning, you know, when you realize that they're divorcing, it's a sour note, you know, like it's sad because the last movie ended with them happy. As crappy as that movie was, the last movie ended with them being a happy couple and with their dumb son. And so
piece of shit.
I enjoyed the fact that throughout this movie, while they're on this adventure, the movie still finds ways to slow down for a minute and acknowledge not just that he's really old, but also that he's carrying around all this shit with him. You know, like he's still mourning his son. He's just generally sad. You know, he's feeling the effects of age and the fact that like all of his friends are either really old or dead. And, you know, his dad's gone. Like he's got all this stuff that he's carrying along with him and he's still able to buck up and be Indiana Jones when he needs to in the moment. But, you know, he's slower and I like the fact that they took the time and Harrison Ford invested enough to make him a real human being and give it emotional stakes, because it didn't, yeah. It didn't have to, you know, it didn't have to have an emotional stakes, but it does. And I really loved that. I love the moment on the boat when she asks him what he would do if he went back in time. And he gives this talk about how he would keep his son from enlisting, you know, and it rings really true and it's really effective. And then the movie picks up again, you know, like it doesn't dwell. It just like takes a few beats here and there to kind of, you know, build it up so that then at the ending, there's that kind of catharsis and payoff as well.
Yeah. And I, again, appreciate that they used the fact that they didn't have Shia LaBeouf or didn't want him as a plot point. You know, it's like it wasn't just, oh, he's dead, let's explain him away, but it did have emotional stakes and payoff at the end of the film.
Yeah, I
and
read
it
an
shows
interview
why
with,
he's sort of living alone in that shitty apartment complex and all of that.
James Mangold, and he said basically, there's two ways you can go with this. You know, like he's not going to be in the movie, so you can either ignore the fact that he ever existed, or you can, you know, come up with a reason for him not to be in the movie. And you know, the character was too big of a part of the last movie to ignore. So they felt like the obvious thing to do, you know, that the timing works out, right? Vietnam, you know, like, that's one way to do it. It makes sense, you know, it absolutely makes sense.
Wish we could have got that scene.
wish we could have seen Shia catch some bullets. Is that what you're saying?
He gets dropped in and killed immediately. It's like not even... You know, his pants are down. He's taking a dump in the woods. Stray bullet. He's not even a hero.
So I do want to talk about the beginning of the film.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
You know, it's a good, like, 30-minute segment, at
least.
It's
long.
At least. Like it follows along with the tradition of, you know, Doc Ock in the cave getting the idol. And, you know, the circus train segment at the beginning of The Last Crusade, you know, the adventure before the adventure, the diamond heist or whatever it is in Shanghai and Temple of Doom. So it follows along with those. But I felt in this movie tied in even more closely with the overarching plot, right? Like the diamond heist in Temple of Doom, once that's over, it's over. Yeah, all that ends up happening is he picks up Willy along the way. Right.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Raiders of the Lost Ark. It introduces Belloc, but, you know, that the idol is not particularly involved in the rest of the movie. But this, it introduces our bad guy. It introduces, you know, the dial itself. You know, there's a little bit of exposition about what the dial does and where it came from and so on. And I don't know. How did you feel about this segment in general? Like, Where were you at with it?
Again, the early part of the movie to me, even though this is an adventure on a train and they're running on, I've seen all of these sorts of things before. It felt like Indiana Jones, in that he had this other doctor guy who's not as, or, you know, what do you call him? Professor or whatever. And he's fine. I did like that they had the spear that pierced Jesus, and they're like, oh, it's a fake. So, okay, we're done with that, right? We're not doing Jesus this time. And I found the de-aging a little distracting, not because it was bad, but it hit that uncanny valley in several points where it was like, okay, I can see the seams here. And there are a lot of times where they almost went out of their way to show the de-aging. Like there's a scene where he's shining a bright light, in Indy's face, and then it really makes it glaring. I'm like, why would you do that? Why not have him cloaked in a little more shadow?
That's one of the two moments that it really hit me. Like when they first pulled the bag off his head, my wife was like, damn, that's good. And I was like, yeah, it really is. Like, that is really good. But then there's that moment with the light shining in his face, and almost like it takes on like a video game like sheen, right? Like a really good a really good video game, but it's
like a AAA video game.
Still not quite right, you know? And then there's one other moment where when they're fighting on the train. Oh, I remember. He's chasing the train with the motorcycle, and he jumps from the motorcycle onto the train. He kind of pulls himself up into the light, and the light is shining in his eyes. And I'm like, it looks like a zombie for a second, you know, like yeah. Just is not like there's just something a little off about it. And there are a few other moments where it's just not 100%. Nonetheless, like way better than back in the day when they did like Professor X and Magneto and the X-Men and so on. Still, I insist the best this has ever been done is in the Captain Marvel movie with Sam Jackson. Like,
yeah,
he is in that entire damn movie de-aged, and you cannot, there's not a single moment of like, oh, they're shining the light in his face and he looks off. Like, they nailed that shit. So yeah, I wish that this movie was a bigger hit and would be considered a bigger classic, so one day they might go back and kind of tweak this a little bit and just kind of fix those effects a little more, just a little, like a hair, just like,
yeah,
so close, it's just like a hair off at certain moments. That said, I really loved this. Like, I loved getting this mini old school Indiana Jones adventure in the beginning of this movie, and there were so many great moments in it, like the scene where they're hanging him and that bomb falls into the room.
Oh yeah, that was good.
The carpet is slipping and the bomb is gonna fall, and it goes boom 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 from floor to floor and then like explodes and kills all the dudes, and he's saved because he's hanging and not standing on the floor. I loved that bit. The whole bit where they're coming around the corner and the airplanes bomb that anti-aircraft gun and it turns kind of sideways,
yep,
and it's shooting back on its own train, knocking all those dudes off. I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like this is exactly what I want out of an Indiana Jones movie, you know, like just turn the screws. So yeah, I really loved it, despite, you know, the occasional hinky special effects, which, like, let's be real. We know that everything in this movie isn't real anyhow, so, like, a little bit of hinky special effects isn't going to bother me that bad. And compared to where we were 20 years ago, it's kind of a miracle what they're doing these days. The fact that they were able to take him and 99% of the way turn him into his 40-year-old self, pretty goddamn impressive, you know?
Yeah. I do like the introduction of our villain. I think he's appropriately villainy. He looks like an Indiana Jones villain. And my only issue is when he gets just absolutely hammered by that pole, he should be dead.
He gets wrecked.
But I can live with the fact that he's not dead. But he looks amazing. Like, he came out of it with not a scratch on him.
There's like some hints of a scar I noticed in that hotel scene, but like you would figure he'd be like James Bond villain, half of his face gone, you know, like just like
there would
totally
have to be some
wrecked.
Severe facial reconstruction, because his skull would collapse in the way he got like T-boned. But I'm okay with it. It's not that big of a deal, but that was the only thing where I'm like, that guy should be more menacing with like scars and shit. He's one of those guys who naturally looks evil, but I kind of missed that. I thought he was properly foreboding, even though he was not really a man of action. He has a man who paid men of action, but I think his presence was always good on screen. Like, you're like, ooh, this guy's, he's just like something appealing about the fact that he does sort of honor his word in a lot of ways. Like, oh, you want to be paid? Boom, you're paid. Like, he's not trying to pull one over on you. He's an evil guy, but he's like, I just want to be evil, and I'll pay you to be evil.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's kind of taking the approach that none of this matters anyhow, because he's going to go back in time and change everything. And you don't necessarily know that at the beginning of the film, but, like, his entire motivation is to go back in time and to become Hitler. More or less. Like, it's so funny because, like, the big philosophical question is always, if you could go back in time, would you kill Hitler when he was a baby? You know, you could talk for endless. I don't know how many times I've had that conversation, but it's like a lot. Yeah. And it's funny that the plot of the bad guy in this movie is to go back in time and kill Hitler and take his place, like knock him up, bump him off before he like really comes into full power, and to be to be Hitler, but to be, you know, in that role,
the new Führer,
the new Führer. Like he's like, Hitler was a sucky Hitler. I feel like I can be a better Hitler. Like, he was not evil enough. I got it. I could double down on this. I've seen every mistake Hitler made. I can fix that. So and I think it's
the best
character development.
Yeah. The best character development for that character to me is when the room service comes into his room and, you know, there's the guy there that served in World War II. And I don't think it's on accident that the character's played by a black man. And he's talking to Ed. In the opening scene, you don't really get how devoted this guy is to Nazism until this scene where he has that. He's like, yeah, I served in the battalion and we dropped here on Normandy, or, you know, whatever he said. He helped win the war, right? And the guy looks at him and goes, you didn't win the war. Hitler lost it. And there's that moment of just such racism in his tone. Like, I've seen a video of like this. I don't want to give the guy's name, but this white nationalist guy was talking to a gentleman from, it was a black man from England. And he says, like, I'm European. And the guy's like, no, you're not European. And it was just so offensive to me. And I was like, oh, I want to choke him. And I got the same feeling from this guy. Is like, you didn't win the war, you know, Hitler fucked up. And I just was like, this guy is the worst. And I just think that they did such a great job of making me hate the villain and yet have him be sort of compelling, you know, like just because he does things, he never really tries to kill Indy unless Indy's in the way, right? Like, if he's in the way, I'm going to try to kill him. But once I have my stuff, I'm fine. You can live. Bye. It doesn't matter. I'm changing history. And so there was something that I want to be careful with what I say, but appealing. Not his ideas and what he's doing, but in the same way that, like, Thanos is an appealing villain on screen. The motives are there and they're clear, and that's what they did here.
Yeah. I mean, it's macro evil versus micro evil, right? Like, I've got this gigantic macro evil plan that's going to alter the fate of everyone. I don't need to be concerned in the moment to moment. I can have, you know, pity or, you know, compassion for one person because it doesn't matter, because my macro evil plan is going to cover this anyhow, you know?
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. The Thanos comparison is a good one. Because yeah, I mean, he's working his way towards an apocalyptic change. So in the moment, it doesn't matter to him, you know, like, yeah, he'll be gracious in the moment because he knows that, you know,
and in a way that even makes it more evil. Like, it's so nuanced, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
so I read somewhere along the line, and I don't know if it made it as far as like screenplay levels, but somewhere along the line, the idea was that the last act of this movie would be them going back to 1939 and Indiana Jones finding himself in the position where he's trying to defeat this guy and save Hitler, which I thought was a really interesting idea. I 100% understand why they didn't do it, right? But it's a really interesting idea that, you know, I was thinking, have you ever read the short story? I think it's Ray Bradbury, called A Sound of Thunder. Mm-hmm. You ever read this? It's about people that go back in time to hunt T-Rexes, right? And so when they get there, there's this company that goes ahead of them and sets it up. And that company determines where this T-Rex is going to die naturally. And then they give these people this very specifically plotted path that they have to take. And they have to kill this T-Rex in this specific moment. And it'll, like, fall where it didn't have. Okay, so one of the guys gets super excited and he jumps off the path or whatever. And he steps on a butterfly. And then they come back to the present and everything is different. The language is different. The buildings are different. The people are different just from this act of stepping on this butterfly. And I don't know if that's really what the butterfly effect, like where that phrase was termed, but I wouldn't doubt
surprise
it.
Me. Yeah.
It
yeah.
wouldn't surprise me if that's where it came from. But the idea of Inni having to preserve history by preventing a butterfly effect type thing is really interesting. The idea of going back in time where Hitler is the lesser of two evils is really interesting. You know, like it's maybe a good plot point for a different science fiction franchise. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I really see why they didn't do it. And this is so much more fun and so much more in the spirit of the film, or of the franchise. But it is an interesting idea. You know, I like toying around with it in your head is, you know, clever.
And if they did that, we wouldn't get this great line from Indy while they're in the plane heading to this portal where he's like, I don't know where we're headed, but it's not 1939 Germany. And like in that moment, the villain's face drops and he's like, oh shit, he's not fucking with me. He knows that we are not headed where I'm trying to go. And I loved the sequence of them going in the plane and getting back in time and appearing. And I didn't know where they were headed, right? We didn't know. I could have been the future. But they go back and find, you know, Archimedes and the thing with the plane. And they got a dragon. And they're shooting these huge, and some of the kills with these spears, like the co-pilot, gets speared. And then the guy hanging out of the side of the plane gets speared. And it's awesome.
Yeah, the spears are, like, super deadly. I was really interested in seeing, like, the tech that they decided, okay, he sets it up at the beginning. Archimedes, you know, he had these mirrors, and he was setting ships on fire, and he built these claws that would pull the ships out of the water, and so, like, those spears are kind of in line with that. But I was like, God damn, they had stuff like this back in, like, 200 BC? Like, Jesus, these things are deadly as hell, you know. These giant spears are shooting at these boats. I'm with you. It was really, really neat. And I loved when they revealed, and it was just like a passing line, and I think probably a lot of people could have even missed it, that no matter what they did, it was a fixed deck. Archimedes was bringing them back to him. Like,
yeah.
No matter where they thought they were going from the future, they were going to Archimedes. And it was kind of like a callback to her doing her magic trick on the boat. You know, this is like, it's a trick. He's tricked you.
Yeah, I'm forcing
you're coming
the
back
card,
here.
Yeah,
yeah, you're coming it's back here to catch. Help with this war, which I thought was very clever. Like, he created this elaborate thing that's been pursued throughout history with the idea that screw you, whoever finds it, you're ending up here with me, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you're gonna help me with my effort. I'm just like a cry for help into the void of the future. I'm gonna make this device and you're coming back here to help with this war. I thought it was very interesting.
And they subscribe to the one of my favorite time travel rules is whatever is has been, right? You invented time travel, but time travel was always invented and you had always gone back, and you know what I mean? And I kind of dig that rule set because it makes the most sense to me. Like, that I can't find holes in this. So this is all the same. So there are a lot of action scenes in this. One that stands out is the buggy chase. We're in the little buggies going
with
down
the
side road.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was really strong, not too heavy on the CG, good amount of real mixed with some ways to enhance things. Because again, Harrison Ford isn't capable of leaping probably from buggy to buggy, but I think they did a pretty good job. That I found to be a really good and exciting chase. Did you feel that Teddy was sort of in there to be a new sort of short round? Because essentially he's her short round.
Yeah, kinda. Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. He's her short round. A thiefy kid who's kind of her sidekick that is following her around. And yeah, I think so. I'm with you on that chase sequence. I I thought that that chase sequence was what they were trying to do in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull with the jeeps in the on the two roads where all the plants are whacking them and, you know, all that with the monkeys and all that bullshit. This felt very much more like what I wanted out of that scene. Same concept. Everybody's like flopping between the different vehicles and, you know, hanging from one to the other and, you know, last second, oh, the door gets snapped off the car sort of shit. Like, yeah, but way, way, way better. Way better. Yeah. Like, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was probably the best stunt sequence in the whole film, or action sequence in the whole film. Like, it kind of reminded me of the trucks and the motorcycles in Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they got Marion in the back of the truck and he's chasing after her or whatever. Like, it just had that vibe. It had the right Indiana Jones chase scene vibe, you know, and that's, I really liked it. Yeah. How did you feel about the diving and the eels?
That was probably my least favorite of the scenes, because I felt like, okay, we want to do snakes and the underwater snakes. So I get that there, but that was more of a big CG mess to me than the other scenes. And I just kind of really didn't need it.
Yeah, it lost me a lot too. Immediately my brain went, well, that wood wouldn't still be there underwater after all this time. Like, that boat wouldn't still be there. That's crazy. Now, those skeletons would be rotting away by now. This is poor planning. Like,
I did, however, really like the tomb raiding they did late in the movie.
100%. Yeah. Like when they got in there, I was like, oh, now we're doing it. Now we're doing it. All of the chambers filled with methane. Let's go. Like, I was really into it.
To me, I was like, now this, like watching that, and I can't even remember if they did any tomb raiding. They did do some tomb raiding in 4. But this felt just like classic, you know, puzzles, like, oh, we got to do water displacement and then the thing slides down and there's a hallway filled with bugs, which I was all right with. It wasn't as good as the bugs in Temple of Doom, because I felt like those bugs were really there on screen with real bugs, you know, but it worked. But I did enjoy the tomb raiding here. I thought it was a really good. And that's where they fed the, you know, gave you the little watch on Archimedes' wrist that, you know, pays off later. So I was excited to see that. And that's about really where I started vibing with the movie, is pretty much after the eels. Like, I got, when the eels was happening, I was like, all right, fine, you know. But afterwards, I was kind of on board. Like, when she started decoding the wax thing, and that started a feeling more like Indy, you know, and she misled them, and that's when I got on board, was once the eels were over.
Yeah, I think I was on board probably before you were, but I think we both landed in the same place. While I kind of agree with you about her not necessarily clicking with him, I still enjoyed her in this movie. I like her a lot. Have you ever watched Fleabag?
I watched the first season. Yeah.
It's a hoot. She's funny. Like, and raw.
That ending is depressing as hell, but yeah. I watched it, so it was good.
Yeah, I enjoy her. I think she's like a kind of fun screen presence. I kept expecting her to turn towards the camera and start saying crazy shit. But I think maybe the reason like they don't seem to click as well is because they're kind of at odds the entire time. Like, she definitely, who's that guy in the 4th movie who kept like double, triple, quadruple crossing everybody?
That guy sucked. And that's what I kept expecting too. Yeah.
Yeah. I was glad that they didn't do that again. Like, I'm glad that she kind of came around and revealed herself to be a decent human being beyond all of her, you know, plans.
She's
and
trying to pay
schemes.
Back debts. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I in the end, she is definitely not the worst sidekick. She's no Willie, you know, like I think she's a hoot, and it's interesting that she's kind of an adventurer on her own. Like, she is capable of doing this adventure by herself. You know, she kind of agrees to team up with him because they're both going in the same direction. But you get the feeling where if he was just like, I'm 80, I'm staying home, she would go anyhow, right? Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, she's 100% able to like do this. And yeah, I thought that was interesting. They're never going to do it, but I wouldn't mind seeing the further adventures of her in her short round. Like, I would watch that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's never going to happen, but I would watch it.
My thing is, her short round Teddy is not as engaging as short round is.
No.
Like, he's
no.
very kind of, he's stoic. He does some things that are kind of like, he is wily, but he's a really quiet wily. I will say one thing that got me in that scene when they're in the final, not the final temp, but the temple, and they're going through the tomb, is when he gets that guy and they both fall in the water and he undoes the handcuff and handcuffs that guy underwater. My eyes went up like, oh shit, he just murdered that guy. Right. Like, oh, brutal.
I had the exact same reaction because that dude is like a force of nature in this movie. That is the largest human being ever to exist. Like, there are some shots of him where he is just like hulking over Indy, hulking over everybody. He is huge. And the fact that they let Teddy like take him out in such like a tricksy way. Yeah, I was into it too. I had the same reaction. Like, shit, he just fucking killed that guy.
Like, yeah.
That guy's done.
I was like, whoa. Yeah, I that was a good scene for me. I also enjoyed the what I would call the number two guy, the mustache guy. He was appropriately slimy and kind of looked like he was the kind of guy who looked forward to shooting people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, these movies excel at their number two bad guys. Remember the Nazi guy from the third movie? The one that ends up going over the cliff in the tank. He's a great number two bad guy. Yeah, or maybe he's number three. I don't know. It's hard to say. There's so many bad guys in that. I'm thinking maybe Elsa's number. Doesn't matter. Jesus Christ.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. That's a
good
movie.
It doesn't matter.
We should watch it again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely more positives than negatives on me for this one. I did really enjoy it. Not sure if I'll watch it again. Again, not my total cup of tea, but I would argue this is one of the top four Indiana Jones films.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to watch it again. In fact, I'm going to get off of our recording and go probably finish it this afternoon. So let me ask you this. I don't have a lot of questions here, but I did want to ask you how this impacts your rankings. If you had to rank them now, where would this one slide into your rankings?
Boy, so, because really, the only competition I think for me is Raiders as far as the closeness, because Last Crusade is still head and shoulders the best. I really like Temple of Doom now. I find it to be really exciting and different, and it's one of the ones where Indy is actually the good guy. Raiders never has clicked with me in the same way that it has others. I usually find it to be a little more of this, but I still, I don't know. It might seem blasphemous to say I like it more than Raiders because I love the whole time travel thing. But I would say that Raiders is third. This would be fourth. And of course, Crystal Skull dead last because it's poop.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm.
Can I guess yours? I want to guess yours.
Yeah, go ahead. Guess mine. Okay. Let me hear what you
got. Last place, Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
Fourth place, Temple of Doom. Third place, this, Raiders, Last Crusade.
You fucking nailed it, dude. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, of course. Man, I'm predictable. Jeez Louise.
Well, we also recorded episodes together. It's not like I'm not uneducated in this fact that you really don't like Temple of Doom that much.
Well, yeah, it's not my fave. Like, I've come around somewhat on it after listening to you and Joey be enthused about it. But yeah, it's definitely well below the other two. So yeah, I definitely think this is better than Temple of Doom. You know, like if I'm sitting in front of both of them and I have to pick one to watch, I'm watching this every time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, obviously this is the last, I think this is the last Indiana Jones we're going to see. Like Harrison Ford has made very, very expressly clear his wish for this not to be recast. That doesn't mean they're not going to do it. They recast Han Solo at a certain point. And of course, there's all those young Indiana Jones chronicles floating around out there, which you can watch on Disney Plus, which are actually pretty fun. It's an interesting show. But I think this is it. This is it for Indy, at least Harrison Ford's Indy, at least for a very long time. You know, I think they'll
in his lifetime,
a good respectful 20 years. If they,
I think they will allow Harrison Ford to pass before they reboot it. But they will reboot this.
Do you feel like this was a good send off for the character? Like,
yes, I'm actually glad it exists because Crystal Skull was such a big log of shit, and I think that Crystal Skull was supposed to be a send off. Like, he marries Marion, they walk out together, and boom, Shia LaBeouf is the new Indy, right? But that movie sucks so hard that they kind of had to go, all right, let's try again. And I think that this movie was focused on Indy, his old age, life has beaten him down. And at the end of the day, he gets the woman he's really meant for, despite their tenuous beginning of her being in middle school, that works for me.
Yeah, it really works for me too. It made me think a lot about my own aging process. I don't know, like that moment when he's climbing the cliff and he's like, "What am I doing here? I got two bad shoulders. I got plates in this leg and screws in the other one. I've been shot 9 times and this
what
and that."
Is,
and the other.
She's like, "Stop complaining." And then he says something like, "Well, you didn't have to drink the blood of Kali or something like that."
Right, exactly. Yeah, I loved it. But it made me think about like my own, like, I'm 51, and actually, soon after we get off this call, we're going to celebrate my daughter's birthday at the ice skating rink, at the ice skating rink here in town. I will not be ice skating with my artificial knee and my bum shoulders and my hands that don't work right. Like, that's not a thing I'm going to do. So props to Harrison Ford for getting his ass out there at 80 years old. And, you know, obviously, lots of stuntmen helping out with this, but he is Harrison Ford. If he's, you know, if it's a shot of him falling down, he's just going to go ahead and fall down, you know, right. Like he's any point where he can take the place of the stuntman, he's going to do it. Like, that's just how that guy is. So, you know, big ups to him for like getting out there and doing the thing, man, one more time for everybody, because it's a shame not more people saw us at the theater. I hope now that it's on streaming, it'll pick up a bigger audience and more people will enjoy it, because I thought it was good, and I thought it was a great send off for the character and for the franchise. You know, I like you, am very happy that it exists.
Yeah. I'm happy for Indiana Jones fans that they have this, and I hope they enjoyed it. And you did, and you're a big Indy fan. Let me ask you, when they inevitably reboot this, who plays Indiana Jones?
Nope. No.
You're not going there.
I mean, there's nobody. Yep. Certainly not goddamn Chris Pratt. You know, and that's nothing against Chris Pratt. Like, but I've heard his name thrown around, you know, for this. And you know,
I thought more a different Chris. I thought kind of Chris Evans might have the charisma with the action muscle. And I think that Chris Pratt definitely is oversaturated. I don't have anything against him either, but he is in too many things.
He is in too many things. He's in too many franchises. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Chris Evans isn't too bad. He's got like the right body type.
Chris Pine.
He has that,
I don't know why they're all Chris's.
Chris Pine's a little old now, I think. I don't know if he can, you know. He's getting on towards older Captain Kirk as opposed to younger Captain Kirk at this point. Chris Evans is not a bad choice. But honestly, I don't want it. I agree with that. I want them just to leave it the hell alone, let it go down in Hollywood history, and come up with something new now. Come on, Disney. You can do it. You can come up with one new thing, Disney, for the love of Christ.
Don't they come up with new stuff all the time? Aren't there little animated films always like huge hits and completely original IP?
No, kinda. Like Frozen, yes, and Encanto, yes. But this last movie, Wish, that just came out, I went to see it with my kids. Oh my God. It's just like a grab bag of throwbacks to other things.
Didn't they did Zootopia? That was an original film.
Oh, I love Zootopia. Yeah, you're right. Okay, I'm shitting on Disney a little too hard. I'm sorry.
Well, that's, you can. So they're a big corporation. I don't think they need my protection.
I took it too far. So, okay, so Spielberg chronologically, not chronologically as a show, but Spielberg chronologically, what do we got coming up?
Well, Spielberg chronologically, we are going to tackle the musical version of The Color Purple. I don't know when, but probably shortly after this episode releases.
Okay. Cool. And then chronologically, we're heading, and this is no surprise to regular listeners, we're heading into Stephen King. And when is that going to start streaming?
April 3rd, we said?
Okay.
So we're going to take the month of March off, even though this is coming out in March. So we're honestly not taking any time off, to be honest. It's like maybe one episode would be missed, you know, I don't know. But it's looking like the way things are going, we might have two episodes in March, this and Color Purple. And then the season of Stephen King 70s and 80s starts off proper on April 3rd. And then we'll be at our usual twice every 2 weeks thing, but we've got lots of bonuses planned for that season. We have some other things. It looks like M. Night Shyamalan's daughter is directing a film. We'll definitely be on board with that and covering that whenever Shyamalan or Spielberg drops their next picture. That'll be there too, probably in between seasons once again.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, this was a lot of fun. I'm really glad we did this.
Yeah, I'm glad it was good. I was really fearing I was going to be bored throughout the whole thing, but they did it. They redeemed the character, and I'm glad they did.
Absolutely.
All right, well, we'll see you guys whenever the next episode is. Have a good one.
Bye, y'all.